Right, so this discussion is going to be on the theme of combating racism and the rise of the far right. Basically regarding the recent racist attacks in the north, I'm sure you're all aware of, against Roma people. I'm going to give a lead off here, and we're going to have David Carlin, who's a former chair of the Anti-Racist Network. He's going to speak about his experiences and combating racism, etc. And we also have Paul here, who's going to give his experience, specifically, I suppose, on anti-fascist activity. So, I lead off here. The recent attacks in South Belfast, in which over 100 Romanian families were forced to flee the north, should serve as a wake-up call to everyone. Racism is not a new phenomenon in the north, nor is it confined to one section of the community or social class, or simply cannot be reduced to economic factors. The rise of the far right in countries such as Hungary and Italy, and the breakthrough of the British National Party in the recent EU elections, have only compounded fears and anxiety. However, most economists and historians would agree that it is inaccurate to compare the rise of the far right, at least in Britain anyway, with the 1930s. Social and economic conditions are not quite the same, and basically a distraction from the real crisis we are witnessing, which is a crisis on the left, who have a vested interest in playing up the threat of fascism. It uses it to re-indoctrinate itself. But we are witnessing pathetic attempts from the Socialist Workers' Party, allying Unite Against Fascism, to rebrand itself as inheriting the tradition of militant anti-fascism, even though in the past they have distanced and ostracised gender-end groups such as Anti-Fascist Action and Red Action. In the North, fascist groups remain numerically small, even in comparison to the left. And historically, whenever organisations such as the National Front did have a bit of a foothold, they have achieved poor showing in local elections. Indeed, the current Labour government has appropriated many of the ideas from British jobs for British workers to recently referring to the need of local people getting access to local housing first. It is the current administration which is curbing civil liberties, privatising public services and deporting migrant workers. We should resist attempts by sections of the media and political parties to demonise an entire community for the actions of a few. The evidence is still unclear as to whether the latest publicised attacks are the work of a specific organisation or the actions of a handful of individuals. Statistics produced by the Observer newspaper reveal that between January 2005 and September 2006, 90% of all incidents occurred in so-called loyalist areas in South Belfast and right across the north. South Belfast is the most ethnically diverse areas in Belfast, and if not entirely the north. The area also is a very transit community with more available housing available compared to other parts of the city, especially in mainly Nazis areas where there is a massive housing waiting list. The availability of housing is a magnet for migrants, not just from outside the country, but also the student population. It is also an area with a high level of social deprivation, and some of the worst housing conditions in Western Europe are in the village. Incidentally, not the fault of immigrants, but decades of underinvestment and parasitic property developers and slum landlords. Conditions created by the conflict here has resulted naturally in many working class communities being suspicious and fearful of those who are deemed others. So the question of loyalism and fascism, while there may be common characteristics between the two, and that elements of loyalist organisations or those who defend themselves as loyalists are active in some of the racist attacks, it is too simplistic to merely equate loyalism with fascism. Historically, these differences can be traced to the Second World War and the struggle against fascism and Nazism. The flying of Israeli flags in some Protestant working class communities is also an anathema to ravage fascists. In 2005, the Ulster Volunteer Force, UVF, reportedly stood down as commander in the village after being involved in the attacks. However, the fact that the youth wing of the UDA, Ulster Defence Association, the Ulster Young Militants have added their name to threatening letters beside Combat 18 highlights this ambiguous relationship. What is fascism then? Fascism, Nazism and racism are words that are used interchangeably and wrongly, attributed to everything from Israelis' collective punishment against the Palestinians to the Stormont administration pre-1972. Fascism, on the other hand, is a distinct political ideology, and thus why we need to understand our enemy and the ideas which underpin it and its violent manifestations if we are serious about combating it. Traditionally, fascist parties have used ethnic minorities as a scapegoat for problems created by capitalism. For instance, the BNP often point to American workers as being the cause of the degradation of the NHS or the reason for the lack of decent social housing. Similarly, they blame migrant workers for taking their jobs instead of attacking employers who routinely pay derisory wages and treat workers like disposable commodities. The reason fascist groups tend to attack ethnic minorities and immigrants in this way are because they want to divide the working class. By sowing seeds of division, fragmentation, suspicion in working-class communities, they undermine notions of solidarity and cooperation, thus strengthening the status quo and perpetrating existing inequalities in society. Racism and xenophobia are not the primary goals of fascism, but rather part of the means for promoting their ascendancy of nation-state. Fascism originates from Italy and promotes the ideas of nationalism and patriotism in opposition to internationalism and class solidarity. Fascism's glorification of the nation is really the veneration of the hierarchies that exist within the nation. Fascists promoted the interests of the ruling elite, the rich and privileged, above those of the majority, and in the past have used all the apparatus of the state to ensure that those hierarchies in society are maintained and bolstered. In this context, talk of supporting the indigenous people is used to garner the support of white working and middle classes to undermine class unity between people of different race or nationality. Fascism should be opposed because it aims to crush all autonomy and freedom in the name of creating a strong nation state. It curtails freedom of expression, supports rigid hierarchies, and most importantly stands against the interests of every working class person regardless of their race and nationality. Fascism only amplifies the violence of the state, such as the police, the army and prisons. Nick Griffin, I might add a Cambridge graduate, is trying to give the party a more moderate and respectable image, exchanging the swastikas for the Marnie suits. Its current programme, based on the previous election manifestos, is not strictly fascist, but rather a law and order one dressed in a left-wing package. The BNP prides itself on the PAN's National Front Party successes in France through building a local base, exploiting local fears and anxiety. The recent breakthrough in the EU elections gives them a national profile. Well, so what about freedom of speech? None of us have the power to stop fascists say what they think. We cannot legislate, nor do we have an interest against the words, no matter how vile we consider them to be, and neither would we want to be in a position to do so. However, that doesn't mean we should tolerate their presence in our communities or allow them a platform from which to organise. History has shown that when fascist groups come to power, they use all apparatus of the state to violently crush progressive working class groups and initiatives. If all that Griffin and his disciples were doing was simply talking amongst themselves about repatriating migrant workers, clamping down on those who they see as deviants, and splitting communities along lines of race, then there wouldn't be a serious problem. The reality, however, is the BNP are organising to gain seats of power and to implement their policies. This attempt to gain power and influence must be challenged by all effective means. Lastly, we need to separate between challenging fascists and a need to challenge racist views and attitudes. So, I think we should advocate a twin approach of ideological and physical opposition to tackling racism and the far right. So what do we mean by this? Firstly, we need to throw out of the window right away any illusions that political parties can solve our problems. Calling for tougher legislation is at best a distraction and at worst counterproductive, ending in being used to criminalise all opposition, including genuine anti-fascists. I couldn't have thought of a better propaganda coup for the BNP than the anti-fascist so-called magazine Searchlight, unleashing their secret weapon days before the EU election. None other than photo op with Prime Minister Gordon Brown, who is head of the most unpopular Labour government in history. This bankrupt strategy is similar with Liberal Party's A Vote for Hope, Not Hate, or Vote Anybody But the BNP, which literally means voting for the same corrupt parties which are responsible for the same anti-working class policies, which are driving people into the arms of the BNP in the first place. I also think we need to reject this artificial concept of multiculturalism. which results in communities being carved up on the basis of race and ethnicity, with each competing block of unelected quangos representing their tribe squabbling for power and resources. This idea undermines class unity and plays into the hands of the BNP, who can then try to represent themselves as the voice of white working class. We need diversity, not division. Physical and ideological physical opposition. A small part of our resources and energy has to gear towards disrupting such groups when we can and when necessary. As Hitler said himself in Power, only one thing could have stopped our movement. If our adversaries had understood its principle and from the first day had smashed with the utmost brutality the nucleus of our new movement. However, the cornerstone of our strategy is a political strategy and a serious commitment to working class communities. This means building a movement which serves the needs and desires of our class. It means working towards tackling them very class issues such as housing, immigration, the workplace struggles which others seek to racialise. It means advancing anarchist ideas and methods of struggle through propaganda and our involvement in the class struggle as equals. So I'll hand this over to David.
Thank you very much, Sean. People will be aware by reading the newspapers and watching our television screens of the recent racist attacks on the Romanian community. These attacks once again went all around the world, and we were once again labelled the race hate capital of Europe. I want to take this opportunity briefly here to record and to tackle the myths put out during that time by the state, by politicians, and even leading members of NGO organisations here. What happened was a number of attacks had occurred, up to 10 attacks on the minority ethnic community. These attacks included attacks on children, the production of guns. People were told they're going to be burnt and firebombed out of their houses. Nazi material, slogans, and people saying were from groups such as Combat 18. With that, those residents decided to organise defence, protection and solidarity with and for the minority ethnic community. They contacted a media outlet to advertise and to tell them to get down there. They told them they'd have to see the police reports first. So as the attacks continued, a rally was called in South Belfast by local activists and local residents within the area. That rally was well attended by many people. At that rally, the rally was verbally abused and then attacked by a number of youths. And because of that, a number of those at the rally went after them in defence of the rally, because there was young people there was children there, and there was many other people there at the same time as well. Now, the myths put out by the state and by the NGOs, etc., talk about such things as the very fact that there was defence given, that this heightened detention, this made the minority ethnic community more vulnerable to attacks, and it should be left in the police hands. Have no doubt that those attacks that I have described were attacks on children. They were attacks 10 times. There were threats, and as I said, there were guns, etc., waved. The police were contacted on numerous occasions, and they didn't step up to the mark. It was only after that rally, when the media focus came to South Belfast, that the police, the state, and those NGO organisations then got involved. So, what this reminds me of is the exact same myths that happened around the time of the anti-racism network, that leave it to the police, leave it to the staff agencies, etc., etc. The reality is, and what I have have learned through experience, and someone was talking earlier on about experience through struggle. The reality is that these people will only be moved, the state will only be moved, those organisations will only be moved into taking action whenever people from the local areas themselves take a stand, and that's what happened there. Now, Sean was reading out there about the different forms of racism, the ideology of fascism, etc. And some have said that these attacks were organised by fascist organisations, etc. At the end of the day, what we have seen is once again an overt rise in racist attacks on the minority ethnic community. We have seen those using the slogans of fascism, and that's not to say that organised fascism is there. But I'd like to say this, because I do know through talking to people that some people are worried that fascist organisations might make a rise here. And there has to be a distinction, I believe, of how to tackle racism and how to take on fascism. The Anti-Racism Network was a broad platform of many people around society. It was, in fact, the embracement of civil society against the racist attacks, which seen even loyalist leaders attending some of the rallies there. And in many parts, it was a success. But if fascists take to the streets here, then have no doubt, the way they organise will be completely differently from the way they organise against racism. And I state this categorically here for the first time, because if there is any formal structure or any formalisation that needs to take a stand and seeks to take a stand against fascism and fascist organisations, I say a number of things. Firstly, people who get involved really need to think about it, right? And I would urge people to get involved to take a stand against fascism, because when you get involved in taking a stand against fascism, more especially in this big part of Earth, here, as we know as the North of Ireland, then you're up against people who have access maybe to weapons, you're people who have affiliations to loyalism and who are involved in fascism, may seek to set up fascist organisations. So at the end of the day, when you take that stand, you could be up against prison, you could be up against beatings, you could be up against threats, etc. Because whenever I was involved in the Anti-Racism Network, I'd received several threats. And even that young guy who was in the papers recently, he received a death threat just for taking a stand, putting himself forward. I know a number of the NGOs had similar threats as well. So I believe that in the time ahead, given the economic situation, given the continuous social and economic deprivation of working class earners, that there may possibly be such a rise. So I believe that people do need to get organised around it. I believe we also need to break down the myths that the state and the NGOs, etc., put out. So that's just a brief thing that I wish to record at this period of time, and I'll pass you on the call.
Hi, my name's Paul. I'm from Dublin, WSM. I moved to Dublin in 2007. Before that, I was living in Leeds, in West Yorkshire. I moved to Leeds in 1984, and then in 1986, I was one of a number of people who got together and formed an organisation called Leeds Anti-Fascist Action, and then was involved in Anti-Fascist Action and its successor organisations in Leeds, Antifa and the 365 group, until I moved to Dublin in 2007. So kind of over 20 years of anti-fascist activity, I suppose. Why I'm going to follow on from what David was saying and talk specifically about anti-fascist activity and the broader political struggle against racism, because the political struggle against racism has to confront the racism that we see from mainstream political parties, from the tabloids, in the media, and so on. And that's a much bigger picture. We were set up specifically to deal with fascists in Leeds. At the time, we had the National Front for selling newspapers in town every Saturday. And then if there was Leeds United were playing home, they would go to the pub, and then from the pub they go to the football ground and sell Bulldog outside of the football ground. And they were consistently the first or second highest in the paper, National Front paper selling Leeds at that ground. They contributed towards the culture in Leeds, where the football hooligans would consistently see Kyle on the end ground, throw bananas at black players. The owners of the club, Leeds United themselves, were too scared to have a black player in the club because of the racism of the fans. So the fascists in Leeds had created a culture where it was normal for there to be fascists on the streets in the centre of town